Stefan, ich bin mit dem Motor, haben wir noch Potikat. Von der Schale nach, ich tue sie warm.
Some of the things that we're dealing with as the committee we wanted to satisfy ourselves before we continue with our meeting. But thank you very much, honourable members, and I declare this meeting officially open. You can start with your recording, so that whatever what is going to be discussing now, it must be recorded according to Parliament procedures and processes. Next one, can we then get the apology?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, gentlemen and members. Apologies for my because I have flu. I have received two apologies. One from the Minister, Minister Posavana Ramin Zuma. She has been put off. And the other one is Justice now it's from the Deputy Minister's office. In that she also will be able to attend today's meeting. Thank you, Chair. Those are the two apologies for that.
Thank you very much, Nelisa. Let's continue, honorable members. Kashifa. Sorry. I think DG now, known to Mr. B. Reddy and DG, to start with the summary of submissions for National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Bill B31-31-2022. So today you are going to give us the summary of the submissions that you received, the 52 original submissions and the 17 oral submissions, how you have responded and how have you affected them to, have you considered them? And then we'll take it from there. And then the second item will be okay, the second one will be emotion of desirability of the bill, and we'll have to then, as the committee, agree or disagree in terms of whether we agree that the bill, Parliament can continue with the bill or not. And then the third item will be public hearings report on what we have received as the portfolio committee. Our researchers will have to present that report too. And then next week we'll have to deal with the bill clause by clause, isn't it? Next week, Tuesday, we'll have to deal with the bill clause by clause. Hopefully, our legal team and the state law advisors and the department would have finalized the document that for next week, so that next week we deal with the bill clause by clause, and we need to fast track the process. By end of this term, honourable members, we must go present this bill and be adopted by the House, so that next month we deal with the NYCA one. Over to you, Kashifa.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to all the members. On behalf of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, I want to thank you, Chairperson, for supporting the department. You've really supported us. We wouldn't be here today if it wasn't because of the support of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much. I hope that the bill, once it becomes act, it will really serve its purpose and help South Africans, so that we're also like other countries where women can walk on the streets and fear no evil against them. Thank you very much. We have responded to the inputs that have been made from our public consultations and also to the parliamentary public consultations, and also the inputs by the members here. Non-Dumiso will go through them. We're aware that time is against us, so I won't take long talking here. I'll give Non-Dumiso so that Non-Dumiso can go through them. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Non-Dumiso, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. In terms of the summary of the submissions, we took the table as prepared by Parliament,
and added a column where we provide our response as the department. So we are going to go through it slightly there, and I will state that, as I indicated earlier during our discussion, that some of the inputs are repeating themselves from different organizations. So where there is a repetition, I'm just going to indicate that we've already addressed this and then pass. But we will go through everything that is here. But where is the repetition, I'll indicate. Okay, in terms of first stage, there were no submissions that intend or seek to amend any specific clause. So those, we just noted them. And then page 2, the following page, there is an input with regard to clause 5, functions of the council. There is a proposal that says not only the implementation of the NST, but also accompanied by strategies that is comprehensive. So there is a suggestion that we must add other documents, but we could not actually take the that input on the basis that the NSP specifically states the mandate of the council, and when we drafted the deal, we took it as it is, that the purpose of the council is to ensure effective implementation of the NSP. So we could not accept the suggestion to add other strategies as per the suggestion here. So our clause referred to, it says in order to achieve the purpose of this act, the council must facilitate, there was another one that says to add, ensure that it's part of government employee APP. It was saying we must ensure that the government and APP incorporate the outcomes of the NSP. We did add a new clause. We took that suggestion and we added a new clause, clause 5, sub-clause 1, sub-clause J, that says in order to achieve the purpose of this act, the council must facilitate the integration of the outcomes of the National Strategy Plan on gender-based violence and femicide. They must ensure that they are integrated in the strategic annual performance plan of government departments and on the integrated development plans for the municipality. The new clause was added and it has been discussed in the council. And then the next one was on clause 6, sub clause 1, Board of Council. The 7 members of CSO is problematic. Careful crafting of the criteria set will need to be done to ensure that important groups are not lost in the process. To add, he said, DOE, so there is a suggestion to add more departments, and then there is a suggestion that the process must be transparent and fair so that it does not exclude some CSO. So in that case, we amended the clause and said the board must consist of not more than 15 members to accommodate the suggestion to add more departments. But in this case, we added the Department of Basic Education and the National Prosecuting Authority, which makes now the number of government departments 8 instead of the 6 that was initially proposed. And then in terms of the civil society organization, we've also amended the clause to say the board must consist of not more than 15 members comprising 7 persons from civil society organizations, disability sector, and private sector. So the clause was revised to address this suggestion. Then here we got a general remark, we noted it, and then the coordination through premier's offices has been proven to be good, we noted that. And then we come to the definition of gender-based violence. As indicated earlier, there was a suggestion that says gender-based violence should include financial, and economic and financial do not mean the same, or health, economic and financial do not mean the same thing. I've already explained that in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, economic abuse covers the financial aspect of it. And then civil society should not limit the organizations to represent. That is going to be addressed when we get to the appointment of the board members. Because there was a concern, a huge concern that some civil society organizations will be excluded in the process. And then the purpose, the next one says the purpose includes the elimination of gender-based violence and femicide, which is a huge task to aim for. The wording should be in line with other wording in the bill, such as prevention. So here we say clause 5.4 of the NSP on gender-based violence provides that the council's overarching role is to provide strategic leadership and political guidance towards the elimination of gender-based violence. So that's on page 59. So that's, we did not take the suggestion to replace elimination by prevention, because the NSP talks about elimination of gender-based violence. The next one is the same also. They are suggesting that we must replace, eliminate with prevention. The explanation is still the same, that the NSP is saying the role of the council would be to provide a strategic role to eliminate gender-based violence in some form. I've indicated the page where that will be found on the NSP. And then the council should facilitate national dialogue on the effects of gender-based violence and femicide on society and re-image a society of free from GBV and femicide. So here we said we could not put everything in the bill. This can be included in the strategic document of the council in line with the NSP, like conducting or facilitating of the national dialogue. We thought this belongs to the APP or the strategic plan. We note it and we support it, but not in the bill. And then the other one says for diversity of thought, cultural experience and ethnic views towards GBV and femicide, we propose that the committee must consist of at least one female from each of the following racial groups: African, colored, Indian, and white. It will be progressive to include one member from the LGBTQ, where the chairperson of the board of council is male, the deputy chairperson must automatically be female. Where the deputy chairperson is male, the chairperson must automatically be female. So we said that bill cannot prescribe gender, race, sexual orientation, etc., to mitigate the risk of being declared unconstitutional for discriminating against other groups that we are not going to mention if we start naming all the persons one by one. However, the bill provides for a nomination process that is fair and transparent. That is our response to that. And then there is a suggestion that in terms of disqualification from membership of board, we must say has been convicted, should be amended to has been allegedly accused of or convicted, to prevent those who've been accused but was not convicted from being appointed. So in this case, our response was that we cannot include pending cases in compliance with the principle of innocent until proven guilty. But this was discussed yesterday, and we agreed that we are going to consult with the legal advisor to try and see if we can't provide for pending cases, different pending cases, because there would be cases pending in a court of law, and then there are cases that are pending maybe at a workplace, especially cases of sexual harassment. So we said that one, we that have not decided on cases that have not been decided yet. So this one is still going to hold back and see. If it is possible, then we are going to indicate. Then there was a suggestion that in terms of declaration of financial or other interest of members, 10 days is not reasonable time. We propose 30 days. And our response was that 10 days is enough to prepare information that is readily available, declaration of interest in the company. So we don't think, and this happens before when members take office. So to wait for 30 days for someone to declare, we thought it was 30 days is too long. So we kept the 10 days on that basis. And then on term of office close 9, a member may resign by giving 1 month notification, but the question doesn't cater for what happens when a member has passed away, even though it mentions death in section 11. So we said, according to clause 11.4, a member appointed or nominated to fill a vacancy holds office for the unexpired portion of the term of the member who that member replaces. So even if the vacancy occurred because of death or because of resignation, if there's a vacancy, it's gonna be treated the same way. The new person will be appointed for the remainder of the duration that was still remaining before the member resigned or passed away or for some reason ceased to be the member of the country. So we added a clause there, clause 13, clause 11.3, that says a vacancy in the country does not affect the validity of the proceedings or decisions of the council. So we're saying whether the vacancy occurred due to resignation or death, clause 11.4 will apply. And then in terms of the payment of members, minister must seek guidance from the Department of Treasury on the regulated remuneration level. So we're saying here clause 10, sub clause 2, says the minister in consultation with the Minister of Finance must determine the applicable payment rate and criteria for the payment of the remuneration and allowances of members of the board, corporate stakeholders, and members of the committees of the board. So indeed, the minister is going to consult with the Minister of Finance with all matters that relate to payment of board members. And then in terms of vacancies, clause 11, vacancies can also happen when a member can no longer occupy the role due to health reasons. Should be, the role must be filled immediately and vacant shouldn't exceed 6 months. So here we are saying, well, we added a new clause that actually addresses the issue of illness or injury. So we're saying the president shall remove a member from office on the ground of incapacity due to ill health and injury. And then removal of office, since misconduct is not defined, what will it encompass? What objective standard of misconduct will be used? Would fraud, theft, sexual harassment all qualify as misconduct? Section 7A describes instances that can qualify as misconduct in this context. In cases of misconduct, the labor laws of the country and relevant labor laws locations will be applicable. The bill cannot provide its definition. We cannot come up with our new definition of misconduct because it is defined elsewhere. That definition should be able to be applied when it is necessary. And then the date in terms of meetings of the board, the date, time and place of the first meeting of the board cannot be determined in consultation with the chairperson of the board as professional assistant. The chairperson will be appointed at the first board meeting. So here we say we've amended that clause. We say the first meeting of the board must be held holiday and at a time and a place determined by the minister, where after the date, time and place of all future meetings must be determined by the chaplain. There should be allowance for virtual options for members who could reside in other parts of the country. There should be a attendance register. The process, so our response was that the process of conducting meetings of the board will be addressed in the terms of the strength of the board. So these, we think, are actually important issues, but that do not belong in the bill. That will be addressed in the standard operating processes of the board. And then committees of the board, it is advisable to have an advisory committee made up of stakeholders who are role players with industry experience, keen interest and influence on the board's mission and vision. Here, I think this will be addressed by the clause that gives the minister the power to co-opt. So any expert or any expert advice on any specific sector or specific subject, if there is a need, the minister will co-opt that expert or that stakeholder to provide advice to the council on that specific subject. It does not necessarily require that people must be appointed in the board. And then appointment of chief executive officer should include preference will be given to females. And then here we responded and said this would discriminate against other groups of persons and would render the bill unconstitutional. And then functions of the CEO, there's a suggestion that we must say together with the CFO, the CEO will develop a budget in accordance with Section 53 of the PFMA. So we say the CEO might develop the budget with the CFO. However, as the head of the Secretariat of the Council, the CEO will be accountable for the development of the budget in line with the PFMA. So even the PFMA says the CEO is responsible for the budget of the structure. So we note that the role of the CFO is important, but it cannot also be included in the bill. It does not make sense for the CEO to be head of the Secretariat. He already has too many functions. The Secretariat should have its own head who focus mainly on admin and Secretariat functions and report to the CEO. So we are saying, because here it says the CEO has many roles, many functions working. So we are saying here, in terms of the NSP, the role of the CEO is mainly to lead the Secretariat. That is the main role of the CEO, if not the only role of the CEO. So we did not change anything there because our understanding of the role of the CEO is to lead the council, so we cannot change it. And then for financial management clause, for separation of duties, the CEO should not be responsible for the financial management of the council. Instead, the board should appoint a CFO for the board. So we're saying the board will appoint the CEO and the CEO will appoint the staff of the Secretariat unit, including the CFO. So the board only appoints the CEO and delegates power to the CEO to appoint staff members for the Secretariat. And then functions, taking off the bill. So functions of the council is described in line in the bill are substantially dependent on working with provinces, local municipalities, traditional leaders, state sector, youth sector, etc., as envisioned in the MSP. Bill must be sent back for broader consultation and be considered as a section 76 of both as allowed by the Constitution. So here we said the taking of the bill is the responsibility of the Office of the Chief Sector Advisor and cannot be changed by the department. In terms of broader consultation, the bill was consulted by the department physically in all the 9 provinces. And then general critical points. Nothing is certain that minister will engage communities and municipalities as the big state minister may. This suggests that there is no political will to work with the local and provinces in addressing GBV. The reliance on the minister's discretion is disempowering South Africans and should be viewed as a threat to meaningful active citizenship. So we actually revised clause 22, and now it says the minister must, after consultation with the board, premiers and mayors, prescribe norms and standards for coordination and accountability of the provincial and local gender-based violence and femicide structures consistent with this Act. The promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the intergovernmental relations framework. So the clause was actually revised to say the minister must. And then 80% women also assume there is no room for gender diversity. Clause 6.1 was revised, and the 80% provision was removed in agreement that it actually discriminates against other persons who are not women who would like to serve as board members because of their skills and expertise. And then general support for the bill and recommended that head office of council be located in Cape Town. He said we know that, but the location of the council cannot be legislated on the bill. And then, in terms of purpose of this bill, that's another submission. The submission recommends that in order for the council to reach its goal, it should monitor the performance of public services operating in related areas in order to be able to identify and propose remedies for areas of failure. The bill should specify the organs that shall carry out the control mission, including a reporting timeline, e.g. annual or 4 weeks following savings of the budget. Empowering the council to initiate legal proceedings against any party that does not comply with the current legislation. So we're saying here, clause 5.1 provides that the council must monitor, already there's that provision in monitoring, that says the council must monitor and evaluate the implementation of the NSP by all relevant stakeholders. That includes government departments on a regular basis. And then we say clause 5, subclause 3 provides that the council in consultation with the minister must report to parliament 4 times a year on its activities, the performance, its activities, the performance of its functions, and the achievement of its objectives. So the council is going to report to parliament 4 times. The bill has been actually amended to that effect. Enabling, and then in terms of the bill, the council is responsible for enabling the council to receive complaints from victims of GBV and to accompany them to lodge complaints with competent courts. This will help the board to have a clear idea of the curative and preventive measures that the council should recommend to the relevant minister. So we're saying in terms of the bill, the council is responsible for providing strategic leadership on the elimination of gender-based violence and femicide in South Africa. The cases of gender-based violence will be reported to the relevant authorities responsible for saying and not to the council. But to address issues of litigation, especially on gender-based violence matters, we've already added a clause, like where we say in terms of the committees of the board, we've added, in fact we removed the development committee and replaced it with the legal committee to actually to try and address not going to specifically accompany or
thank you, Chair. I just wanted to check the legal or national process. Does it include services I experienced delivery, but some boys receive it and I don't report? Can the other person, does it include that part where another, say, a neighbor or another person can report on my behalf? Because some people are not easily able to report, but if I experience it, then that
the person really struggling to get help for what it
doesn't allow that
step.
Thanks, Chair.
It's already provided for in the domestic violence, the amended domestic violence act already requires that if you experience or witness domestic violence, you must report.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I have asked for all of you, I've assisted with them.
Thank you, Chair. So implementing an online complaint, we've already addressed that. That country will not be dealing with specific cases. Cases are still going to be reported to the relevant authorities that are already existing. And then it says confidentiality measures should be taken to ensure anonymity of whistleblowers as well as their protection. Publishing of the annual report on the council's official website to raise awareness about the current problems and engage citizens in national efforts. So here we say the annual report of the council is a public document and will be made available to the public on relevant platforms. Clause 5.1c provides that the council must facilitate strategic partnerships between the council and relevant stakeholders as and when required. The strategic partnerships include international, because there was a clause that says we must, it is recommended that the council establish partnerships with foreign research or specialized institutions, as it may help obtain a broader picture. So where it says the council must facilitate strategic partnerships, those partnerships include even international partnership. So that is addressed already in the bill. And then we have a definition. There's a definition of, there's a comment that says definition of civil society too limited. Current definition focuses on organizations, structures, institutions, etc., but excludes individuals, e.g. community activists, individuals consulting in personal capacity, individuals with relevant expertise. In addition, focus appears to be okay. So it says, or civil society is considered as a community of persons, that's our response. And in this case, the bill cannot include individuals in the definition of civil society. However, with regard to expertise, the bill provides for the co-option of relevant stakeholders to provide advice and expertise in their respective fields. That is sub-clause 9 of the bill. And then in addition, focus appears to be on citizen and exclude refugees, asylum seekers, undocumented persons, all of whom are affected by GBV and live in SA. So we say this clause does not refer to victims or survivors of gender based. It refers to members of the board. For instance, asylum seekers and refugees cannot be appointed as members of the group. And the definition of femicide is limited, contends that gender identity is not a visible sign of a person, but of their self-identification. In its current form, the definition excludes trans women. Femicide means the killing of a female person or perceived female.
issues of gender identity. So that is where we said we believe that the term perceived female person should cover all the categories of women or people who identify as women. And then definition of gender-based violence as violence associated with gender is limiting and should be amended as any harmful act against a person or group of people which disproportionately affects them because of their gender. The term, the definition of gender-based violence, like indicated that, as I indicated earlier, that initially it was taken from the NSP and then it was amended to be aligned with the Domestic Violence Act definition, and we left it as this. In functions of the Council, Section 5 needs to better articulate the relationship between relevant stakeholders. Bill states that Council will report to the INC on gender-based violence and femicide and all relevant stakeholders, while the NSP on GBVF states that it will report to President through Minister of Women, Youth and Social Disability. Clarity needed. It needs to include accountability measures that that Council can implement for government departments that do not implement the NSP. So we said clause 5.3 has been inserted to address the concern of accountability and reporting. The Council, in consultation with the Minister, or here we sit saying shall, but we have since done away with the usage of the term shall, now we are saying must. So it says the Council, in consultation with the Minister, must report to Parliament 4 times a year on its activity, the performance of its functions and the achievement of its objectives, provided that the Council may at any time submit any other report to Parliament as a report to the President and Parliament if it deems it fit. I think when we go to clause by clause of the bill, we are going to notice that there are changes that have been made here, but the bottom line is that the Council is going to report to Parliament in consultation with the Minister, meaning the report that goes to Parliament must be discussed and agreed upon with the Minister. It cannot go without consultation and concurrence from the Minister. So that has to address the fear that there won't be any accountability if the reporting is left to the Minister. People were thinking the Minister. So I've already touched on the issue of accountability.
Okay. Just a quick point here. I'm sure we'll deal with this when we go clause by clause, right? But that's what you're saying there, it just needs to be reworked, because you say, provided that the Council may at any time submit any other report, it must be, if Parliament requests any reports, they must give it. So not just one way, it must, the wording must reflect a two-way sort of, because when I read that, it's only, but I'm sure we'll get into it close by close, but just something you can think about so long, Nundumiso. And then when it says to report 4 times a year.
That's one, you're right.
Yeah, and then.
Then must submit a report to us as and when we request.
We request, yes. Correct. Not when they require. Okay, perfect. And then you say, must report 4 times a year. Maybe at least 4 times a year. Because if you do the ATP, it's fine. If you do erratums or amendments, it's now 6. If you do whatever, it's now 7. So if you say 4 times a year, that could give the Council space to be like, we only come 4 times, we don't have to come for anything else. So we must just be clear on the wording. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So in terms of the in terms of where it says the bill needs to do better articulate relationships of stakeholders, we say clause 5 provides that the council must facilitate
that's clear that a member A person can only serve 2 terms consecutively.
If you not only serve 1 term, will you still be eligible if you want to again as the nominated person?
Yeah, because I want to say the term is 2.
But okay, then the consecutive work is no longer consecutive, then the break is 2.
Let's look at PCGE and see what does it say, so that you can capture it correctly. Okay. Yeah, well,
Yes, Chair, I think I've misplaced my CGE, but I've got my NYDA here. But
it's fine. When you are going back for finalizing the bill, you can come back and discuss for as long as you understand as what you want. Is that a member of the board can only serve 2 terms, nothing more.
And never again ever.
Yeah. Even if a person can serve now and then maybe take it and not be reappointed the next term and come back and reapply another time, for that person can only serve once. This person has served in the board. So the second one, even if there's a gap in between, it's the second term.
Chair, I understand the fear or the rationale behind limiting it in the sense that a person can only serve twice, and we don't have any breaks. But what if there are scenarios where these persons have the expertise? I mean, are we not over limiting ourselves?
No, even in Parliament, even if we have if your term has expired, you can come back and be re-elected in another term. So we must not take it like this, because it will be like no person can be replaced.
Yeah. Career board members.
Yeah. So it's not Napoleon Bonaparte, meaning everybody is replaceable. There are many people in the country who've got different expertise. What you have other Jackie also, you know, is a medical person like yourself and DG and not you mean. You know? So nobody is not replaceable in the whole world.
Yes, Chair, noted.
Because other people will take this thing as if it's their home. You know, I've been talking to other members about certain entities whereby a person has been a CEO for more than 20 years. It's abnormal. That's one to be found in the portfolio committee with CGE, where the CEO's post was never advertised. It has been just renewed, as if the person owns the institution. It cannot be correct.
Chair, we will go back and craft something to the effect that we don't open it up for any breaks and people coming back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So thank you, sir. In terms of the next one, there is a comment that says draft bill as it stands, be revised and proposed section 76 to enable adequate engagement at a provincial level as a way to broaden public engagement and participation. So our response is that the bill was revised in 9 provinces and the input were incorporated, but still when the bill was submitted after the incorporation of the input, it did not change the taking of the bill as in section 75. And then we recommend the inclusion of Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Basic Education and the NPA. So in this case we added the Department of Basic Education and the National Prosecuting Authority. The bill needs a CM. We did include the pre-MVS project.
What do you think about the provincial?
I think the bill must be...
Yeah.
bill as it stands be revised as and proposed as Section 76 to enable adequate engagement at provincial level as a way to broaden public engagement and participation. It was a suggestion that we must consult properly so that the input received could maybe influence or inform the taking of the bill. Because there was an understanding that the bill was not properly consulted in the provinces. We did not receive enough input from the provinces and local levels to ensure that the bill is kept in the system.
That's fallacy. Because remember, even us as the social committee, already we advertised this bill for more than 30 days. Am I wrong? For more than 30 days, and during our public hearing, there was one, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Villagas, who said, no, we're not properly consulted or whatever, the people, other NGOs and NGOs were not aware of the public hearings and so on and so on. Then I said, you know, we increase, I asked honorable members if I can increase the bill, the public hearing for 2 weeks and allow other NGOs, civil society organizations and individuals to come and make presentations to the Kofolo Committee. And let me tell you, then we did that, we extended the invitation, and we did not get more. It only cost us, I think, one civil society organization that came to do the presentation with the Kofolo Committee, and even Dr. Villagazi herself, or they, she was supposed to go and talk to those organizations who said they were not given an opportunity and that they didn't have. Yeah, she was advocating for them, that they feel that Bona, they didn't got the opportunity to come and make a oral or written submission. But when we extended, we invited them again, they did not come. So that thing of Section 76, vis-a-vis Section 75, is here or there. This bill gives rise to Section 75. We have consulted enough. Because if Nina didn't consult all provinces enough, Tina will do it as the Kofolo Committee. And you hear, she's been saying, Dr. Villagas was there in KZN. So this thing is here, not there.
Thank you. And then there's a suggestion to include academia as part of civil society. As indicated earlier, the definition, we have included the disability sector and we have included private sector in as part of as additional groups that are going to be nominated or appointed as board members. Okay, it says the members referred to in subsection 1A must be appointed in a manner ensuring participation by civil society. So we've amended the bill, and the process of nomination is going to be done by Parliament in a transparent and fair manner, whereby people will be able to make submissions and then follow through the process and see how it goes.
People which adhere to fairness and transparency purposes and promoting democracy also, that whoever wants to apply or whatever organizations they want to nominate a person, they are free to do it.
And then there was a suggestion to align the definition of gender-based violence to the Domestic Violence Act that we did. And then femicide, in terms of the definition of femicide, there was a suggestion to include an expression.
Uvumelekile ukuthi noma ngabe yiphi umuntu noma yiphi isikhathi isengayenza umuntu abe member yalapho. Manje noma ngileyo into la ngoba ikhona ukuthi ekugcineni la akubi njengoba wena ungakusho kodwa ekugcineni la ugcina usubona udokotela ayenzeki le nto ukuthi kuthathwe mhlawumbe enye imember enye iphathi ifambe lapho. Iyalandela ngazi ukuthi le zinto zohambahambahambe ziphele kanjani lani nalo engqondweni yethu ukuthi siyekepha ngabe sesihleli la somzimba sesisakhe i-South Africa sizozibeka amadokheni longoba into ephathe hhayi noma ngabe uhlakaniphele kanjani asikwazi ukufana. Ngikushiswe yilokho thena yabona ngathi sikuma-interview kwakuney'ngane lapho ubona ukuthile ifanele ukungena kunebhodi yake-NYDIA kodwa kwakusebenza lanto ukuthi lo akaniphathi. Ngiyazi ukukhuluma siyakhulumeka kodwa ezinye izigaba ezinje angisho ukuthi sithe wenengophuzana uthi but kodwa lezinye izinto siyafuneka sife ngoba akwenzeki njengoba siyixoxa mase sifanele sithatha abantu beyilapha. Iyasebenza le nto ukuthi umuntu usuka kuyiphi organization kuyiphi but iyabonga ayi ena ungathi ngiyakhuluma ungqinisekhani ngoba iyasebenza nayenzo sezi-interview nabo. Ngiyabonga.
Ngiyabonga Mhlalo. Angifisa ukuphilisa nalo maphawu
thank you Honorable Chair. The honorable member, she was stating that some of these things, they normally do not happen. You can say them as we are sitting here, Chair, because of, she even made mention of an interview at the NYDA that some of the people, no, some of the candidates that they were there during the interview process, they were deserving to be appointed. However, due to this affiliation, that they were not affiliated to these parties, they did not make it to those interviews.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. No, Umam Kaula, aganga ingcolisi process yethu ye-NYDA. It was a free process, it was a fair process, and also fully supported by all the political parties in this committee. Not even one political party opposed submission that we made to Parliament. It was supported by Honorable Klonyane, who was in, and she was very happy with the candidates that we selected. So, Chair, I don't think that it's a fair comment to say that the process of the NYDA had any political influences in terms of the selection. But safe to say, Honorable Chairperson, I think the involvement of departments, the abantu abasebenza kwama departments,
uhlangweni,
yes. Oh yes. I don't think that this process on its own will also have any political influence. Looking at the seats that individuals will be holding, the ones from departments, those are civil servants, and then ama civil society organizations do not even have any political affiliation. They are community-based organizations that are not really political in nature. So the board of 15 members really will be geared for politics. Umam Kaula, ngiyacabanga ukuthi lokho kungajabulisa kakhulu.
Umam Kaula was just making a comment, and Honorable Masiko is trying to rectify the issue of fairness. Remember, Honorable Members, people are being nominated by whoever nominates them, whether it's a political party or it's a civil society organization. But with regards to this one, it's only civil society organizations that are going to nominate individuals who must serve in the board. But the last person who appoints is the president. We as parliament, we track the process in terms of our criteria, requirements, and do interviews and make recommendations to the house, and then we shortlist. Again, vacancies will be 7, and we'll shortlist 10 people, I'm sure, and then we'll go to the house and present, and the house will adopt all those names that would have been recommended by the panel at that time, whether it's the subcommittee or the portfolio committee, but it should be done like that. And the last person to appoint all those people is the president. So let's leave it like that, so that we continue.
No, I don't need correction. Point of correction.
No, Chair. Yamuzo, honorable myself. Loku, because I was mistaken. Mina ngishonga loku ngangikhona mina before. Yayichitha nje kodwa kwakukhona nale yanto iy'ngane zayihamba phambili ezabuyiselwe emuva. Phela siyekele ngoba mina ngikhuluma ngaleya kuze phela ibe nje because kwabengangenanga laba elani bafuna bangena. Yingakho ngithi mina le nto singayisebenzisi kakhulu ngoba ikhona la ihambahambe khona ibiyisebenze kanje. Ngaphandle kokuthi ifuke manje sesivumelana nakuthi umuntu osezele kuyabhoda sizube ibheke ukuthi uqhamuka kwiphi i-organization or uqhamuka kwiphi ilokhuzana i-society. Ngiyabonga.
Mamkoti?
Thank you for the question. I just want to give a little comment. I don't think Chairperson, these vacancies are coming from the direct political parties. I don't think Mabeya Lapaya are wearing the regalia. So I don't understand Oguchi. Why finally says Oguchi, these board members, they are coming from the ANC, just example, or two EFF members, or one ADA, whatever. So I think this thing is for the public, civil society. Meaning, if I'm there, the others would be a claim, but in a secret way. I think it's like it and the other person. Nendlela mna endicabanga ngakhona ukuba inoba yenzeka ngakhona. Yes. Because if this was done here in the parliament or done by the members of the parliament, okay, the sizo is born clearly. Okay, the 10 members in this 15 are coming from ANC members, one for EFF, DA nothing, COPE nothing, Jalon Jal. But now they are there. There are vacancies openly for the public. This is for the public, not for the parties. I think I don't know, Chairperson, if I'm right or wrong.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
This process, it's going to be, in fact, it will be...
Unless you have the other way, which you are doing, to show yourself if... and the agency, but for your, I don't know, because also we have those tricks.
Yeah, it's something that is alleged, and it fails to be proven by systems and whoever claims, sometimes, you know, even civil society organizations make allegations and that are unfounded. But this process specifically, it's going to be an open and transparent process. People will be nominated or apply as individuals, and they'll be considered for as long as they meet the requirements. You know, I'm sure they'll be shortlisted definitely. And as members of parliament and as the committee, we are a multi-party committee where parties are represented. And everyone, for as long as they are South African free to apply and be nominated. So let's leave it like that. All what is important for us and for the our bill is that people must be free to participate if they want to, for as long as they meet the requirements.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regards to the definition of a femicide, as indicated that we do not take any suggestion in addition to the perceived female, because we believe that when we say perceived female, we cover almost all the categories of people who identify as women. But as indicated earlier in this house, that this needs to be further consulted with the special advice, we're going to do the check. And then here it says, include gender equity or inclusion of diversity units. And so there's a suggestion to add more departments or organizations in the composition of the board. So we explained that we have already amended the clause to include the Department of Basic Education and the NPA, disability sector, and the private sector. Powers of the minister must be relaxed under 6.2 to enable autonomy of the minister in appointing board members. We've since removed the responsibility of appointing the board members from the minister to the parliament, or to the president, on the recommendation by Parliament. And then the submission proposed the use of a district-based model in such a way that replicates section in the constitution of provincial and working groups. So we say here the NSP provides specifically for the establishment of the provincial and local CPD working groups. We have a clause that talks to that aligned with the NSP, and it's not going to be, the structures in the provinces are not going to duplicate the national council. That was made clear. And then the provincial and municipal boards, yes, we said the same thing. They are proposing they say provincial and municipal boards. So basically there's a suggestion that there are going to be boards again in the province and in the local. So the structure that we have nationally is going to be duplicated in the province and again in the local government. And then there's a suggestion 7 persons from civil society. So basically they're saying what we have in the council, in the national council, must be duplicated at the provincial level.
That's why you're using the SANAC model, where it's going to be at the national level, because automatically provincial governments and local governments, they do have structures that are dealing with this. So it's not like we are creating the TDV, we are establishing the council to make structures. No, we're not. This council has got a broader mandate, you know? And then they'll be accounting, and they'll be doing some activities, and they'll be checking, including the Department of Women, for the responsibility to look at what a provincial government and our local government and the provincial government is dealing with issues of gender-based violence and femicide. So the implementation of the NSP, the council will be responsible to looking at how provincial government, national government, and provincial government, including the local government, on how are they implementing the NSP. So it's not like we just want structures. No, it doesn't make. I don't think that's what it says.
So there's another comment that says a facilitating role in terms of the GPD method will not give the council, that's in terms of clause 4, will not give the council powers to effectively address real
said, we changed the facilitation to coordinating, as Kajet said. And there's a clause, there's a comment that says the funding, training, and capacity building of stakeholders, especially the NGOs and the CBOs who are always at the forefront of fighting GBV, is not adequately addressed in the future. So we're saying the bill does not make any provision for the council to provide any funding to NGOs and CBOs. However, the bill provides that council must ensure the development of programs and measures too for education and training concerning the prevention and combating of gender-based violence and femicide.
Yeah.
The council itself will not provide any training, but will facilitate it.
Yeah.
And then in terms of clause 5, the council seems not to be given mandatory powers to advise the minister on relevant issues of GBVF. It must be empowered to call out and set standards for effectively curbing GBV in all its forms. The council reporting to the Department of Women.
The submission that says that.
Yes.
It says what?
It says the council seems not to be given mandatory power to advise the minister on the relevant issues of the
GBV.
So our response is that clause 5 to provide that the council must advise the minister.
Because the council will advise the minister.
Yes. So this clause, Chairperson, has simply, it's the one that we said we're going to consult with the trade advisor in terms of the...
If we were not going to advise the minister, why are we establishing it?
I think they didn't read properly, Chairperson, because it's saying to advise the minister on relevant issues of gender-based violence. It must be empowered to call out and set standards for effectively curbing GBVF in all its forms. The council is reporting to the Department of Women, Youth and Social Disability places it in a peculiar position of having to hold this department. That has been addressed. The council will no longer report. The council will report in Parliament in consultation with the bill. The bill, composition of the bill seems to be discriminated. That's the 80% issue that we've already addressed by removing the 80% provision. Letters concerning GBV are serious in nature, such that the board and minister must have express powers to deal with non-compliance. That is where we added clauses that say the strategic plans of departments and the IDPs of municipalities must incorporate the outcomes of the MSP.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
GBV, definition of GBV should be expanded to include violence based on gender identity and sexuality. So here, Chairperson, I think we aligned it to the Domestic Violence Act and did not want to open it to different interpretations, but as indicated, we're still going to go through the definitions with the state advisor. But as a department, we took the suggestion to align it to the Domestic Violence Act and did not add more suggestions in terms of the definition, especially when it comes to the issue of gender
identity.
Yes. And then the NSP's deadline of March 2024 for achieving its targets should be extended to allow the council time enough to formulate their action plan to implement the NSP, seek public comments thereon, and properly implement the action plan. So we say the 2024 deadline is not provided for in this bill and cannot be extended by the bill, especially as a once-off occurrence. And then operational gaps, the bill's intersectoral approach to eliminating GBV and femicide should include the organs of state listed in Pillar 1 of the NSP, as well as National Prosecuting Authority, so and the Department of Basic Education. That was done. We included the two departments that suggested. And then in terms of the others that are suggested, we terms of their expertise and skills. We have that clause 6.9 on co-option by the minister. The bill must provide for council's operational structures that it can best implement the council. So the clause 24 provides that the minister may, after receipt of recommendations of the council, make regulations relating to norms and standards for coordination of the provincial and local gender-based violence structure. The bill could provide that the minister, the bill could provide that the Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities make regulations if he did that. The bill could require that the council include local, that is covered on clause 22 of the bill. And then appointment of the CEO, the bill does not guard against appointing persons with conflicts of interest as the council CEO. This could be especially problematic when the council embarks on its intersectoral approach implementation. Clause 5.1 provides that the board must appoint chief executive officers who have qualifications and experience relevant to the functions of the council. Be a fit and proper person to hold office. So I think we've addressed that.
Fit and proper here, I think, is relevant. Because if we don't put fit and proper, then we'll miss the right thing to do. So fit and proper is correct.
Yes, 100%. And it is a very flexible requirement, fit and proper. It's able to change to the circumstances that we are dealing with. So a fit and proper legal practitioner will have its own set of requirements.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. So we have a clause on our subject. And then in terms of the functions of the council, the bill does not but should render the council accountable to Parliament. We have since addressed that by adding a clause that the council shall report to Parliament in consultation with the minister. And then the reporting function should be enhanced. Additionally, Section 20 of the bill does not but should provide for public participation in the council's annual reporting function to Parliament. A good example to follow in this regard is Section 6 of the National Minimum Wage Act. So we say the National Minimum Wage Act refers to the annual review of the National Minimum Wage and not the annual report. So the annual report, the development process of the annual report will not include a public participation. We will do it as outlined in the PFMA. Oversight of the council must be improved. Establishing a parliamentary oversight that has been addressed by a clause that says council will report to Parliament. The bill does not adequately address the root causes of gender-based violence and lacks robust measures to ensure transparency, accountability, and competence in the council. Concern this clause about the issues that are more specifically related to the South African police services. It is even mentioned. It talks about issues of DNA analysis, the issues of corruption in the club. So we said the issues raised fall outside the scope and of the possibilities of the council, and there are no suggestions or referrals to specific clauses.
Nundumisa, I think that this part also can fall within those explanations that speaks about strategic plans, because this is more of an operational output, and it can be added to the strategic plans, for example, to do oversight on the DNA backlog, to do oversight on SAP, so on and so forth. So I think just to amend your column just to say to be added to strategic plans.
Yeah.
Thank you.
PO is outside the mandate, and then PIL, the bill as it stands, the bill as it stands does not sufficiently address the underlying causes of gender-based violence. So we say clause 5 provides that in order to achieve its mandate, its objectives, the council must ensure the development of programs and measures for education and training. So that's our response to that clause. And then we say a new clause has been inserted to ensure transparency when the members of the board are appointed. So that's the clause on the nomination process and the appointment by the president. And then here it talks about the corruption or when the members are appointed. We also address that by saying the process will be done by RBA. The proposed council does not have any explicit powers. That's the same issue of substance DNA that we said we're going to refer to the strategic documents of department. Terminology, the issue of may and must, it was addressed when we were going through the field. The definition of GPV is aligned to the GVA. And then the CV recommends that the concept, or that's the issue where it says we must include in the definition of the NSP, the people who developed and who were leading, so we remove all that information. The council appears to be playing a part in terms of the clause that talks about facilitation, we change it to coordination, so that was addressed. No mention is made of as to whether it
can change the facilitation to coordination.
Okay, I've got no issue.
Okay.
No mention is made to whether each organ of state that is responsible for enforcing the NSP at national, provincial level should incorporate. We did include a clause that talks about incorporation of the NSP in strategy plan. And then the issue of local and provincial structure, clause 22 addressed that, and then clause 24 talks about minister making developing regulation on faith. Appointment of CEO and
the people who participated in the touching will then be put in the forward of the minister when you are writing documents.
Because
this is an act.
So here it says appointment of the CEO is welcomed, but it is however unclear what the powers and authority with these multisectoral and intersectoral technical teams here to achieve the thing. CGA recommends that this be clearly outlined. So it says clause 16 provides for the function of the CEO. The representation of the department in the council is inadequate. We've addressed that by adding two departments. And then the issue of the 80%, we've addressed it, we've removed it. It would be vital, or disqualification of members. It would be vital to conduct a trial check. No person convicted of GBV, that is covered. Any person who has been struck off as equal, so there is a suggestion on how the people must be disqualified. So we say clause 7 provides that person is disqualified from being appointed to the board or from remaining a member if that person has been. We address the issue of conviction.
But also, I think in one of the Chapter 9 institutions we have seen where a person is supposed to protect and respect women, and then this person was alleged to be one of the chauvinists, an abuser. So those
abusers. Even women sometimes they are abusers. So this thing must be thoroughly checked.
And then clause 9, CGE contends that 6 month appointment period for board members is reasonable and appropriate, provided that the following subsection be inserted to allow for the completion of a potential appointment of a new member to the board, which must take place within the extension period of 6 months. And to add in suggested text may limit the content to only one reason for extension, whereas there might be unforeseen circumstances that may lead to an extension.
Parliament must try their level best to replace board members every time to avoid this thing of 6 months, because that means some of these people will be having and flat extra 6 months.
Thanks, Chair. There's a suggestion that we must avoid double dipping by government employees. That is not in the bill. Government employees will not be paid. It is explicit in the bill. And then that's the same comment about the different extension. In order to achieve rapid coordination, the CG agrees that it is essential that the council engage provincial. There are, however, no details in the bill regarding the manner. So, clause 24 provides for the development of regulations by the minister. So, the details of coordination will be provided in the regulation after consultation with the board, premiers, and the mayor. The CGE contends that the bill fails to clarify whether the board has the authority to sustain. We have addressed that by adding a clause that talks to the suspension of board members. We did not hear. The CGE outlines the functions of Chapter 9 in the Constitution. The Council does not seek to duplicate the CGE or the Human Rights Commission of South Africa. It is a Schedule 3 entity in terms of the PFMA. Its main function is to provide strategic leadership in the elimination of gender-based violence in South Africa. That was our response. It must be clearly stated that the organization stated herein acts or support the consultation of the department of the preamble was inserted. First of all, in six definitions, content, the reference made, or that's where we say, where it says we make reference to the IMC, yet this is not defined. This was discussed by the department that in terms of the addition or the role of the IMC, we need to consult with the state law advisor in terms of the suggestions that we have.
Yes.
So we're going to address that. The provision of figure the bill provides for the appointment of the board members, chairperson and the deputy chair, the appointment of the CEO who accounts to the board and is responsible for the appointment of the staff. So here we are clarifying the roles of the board and the roles of the CEO in terms of their appointment. The functions of the council cannot be clearly defined. The council itself is not explicitly included in the bill. It is in fact, here we're saying the bill provides for the appointment of the CEO who accounts to the board and is responsible for the appointment of the staff of the council, which is responsible for the day-to-day running of the council. In addition, with the minister,
when the premiers and mayors will establish the provincial. Here we're trying to just clarify the roles of each stakeholder who will be involved in the running of the process. The process of appointing board members will be overseen by Parliament, where people have a concern that there won't be any transparency and fairness. And then the mechanisms put in place to establish the provincial working groups, it is provided for in terms of regulation, as I indicated earlier. The NSP set out clear guiding principles for its implementation. So here we're saying the bill provides that the council shall consist of 15 board members comprising of civil society organizations, government departments. We've since added the private sector and the disability sector. In addition, the bill provides that the minister is the same thing in terms of clarification of roles between national, provincial and local. The bill is silent on establishment of the fund. We've indicated there won't be any funds. The funds of council will come from Parliament. The bill vaguely refers to the regulations but fails to provide this. So clause 24 provides that the minister may, after receipt of recommendations of the council, make regulations relating to, we've listed all the issues that the minister may make regulations on. The MNE suggests that the minister should have responsible person for monitoring. So we're saying the department does have an MNE unit, and the department is also responsible for the effective implementation of the NSP. So the department will not be exempted from implementing the NSP. Or to state that the council's objects are to monitor. Clause 5 provides that in order to achieve its objectives, the council must coordinate the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of the NSP at national, provincial and local level and at community forums. Reconsiderations should be made in relation to appointment of the chief executive officer. The NSP specifically provides for the appointment of the chief executive officer who will lead the secretariat unit. So we did not want to deviate from what the NSP says. Indicates the key institution to secure funding. So the funds of council should consist of mainly money appropriated by Parliament through the applicable vote. So, and then the council will seek donations when necessary. As a government entity, the council will source and receive donations in line with the PFMA. The bill should speak to and be aligned to the NSP of gender. Such alignment should include definitions of, that is what we've already done, aligning the definition of gender-based violence to the Domestic Violence Act. The organs of state are included should also be included in the, or the organs of state that are included in the NSP. So we're saying we have a clause on co-option that actually seeks to address the inclusion of other stakeholders. The definition of femicide and gender-based violence, we've already discussed there. And the definition of civil society, I've covered that earlier. And the issue of co-option, it's like I said that there were issues that are repeated. The issue of 80%, it's a repetition that we've already accountability, we've already dealt with that. Council will account to Parliament. We've added the preamble. We've increased the number from 13 to 15. The submission focused largely on the challenges pertaining to NSP Pillar 5 on economic power and the education. The bills could not sufficiently address the economic aspect of potentially hindering. The department has submitted the promotion of women's rights, empowerment and gender equality bills to the cabinet to request for approval to publish the bill in the government gazette to solicit input the way to be make provisions for economic empowerment of women and the role of public and private entities in the promotion of economic empowerment. The bill of emphasis on sexual harassment, we have included sexual harassment, even though we did not specifically say in the workplace, but it is there. That was it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tiji.
Just to allay the worries of yourself and your members, COPTA is critical, and COPTA has been included in the department. COPTA is the one that coordinates the presidential coordinating council, where the president and the premier sit. COPTA, the MEC sit in the premier's coordinating forum, where the premier and the MECs and all the units and the mayor sit. And COPTA is responsible for the DDM district development model. So it's going to be easy for the council to incorporate the NSP in all those, and even in terms of reporting all the structures that exist. So the coordinating, that's why you can't create new structures. The structures that exist must be the ones that are coordinated, because they're already doing the job. Creating new structures is going to be problematic. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. I'm sure people must understand that we are not just creating structures and structures for, you know, for the sake of creating structures, but here we are establishing a council that should look at critical issues of gender-based violence and femicide. So other operational matters, and they must be looked at by the relevant structures that are there in government already. So I think how you have captured it is correct. And honorable members, I think they are agreeing also, because how we read it also, this is what we feel strong, that it must be like this. Because, you know, if you listen to everyone, everybody will come tomorrow and say, hey, put what? So, but I think the manner in which you have captured it is correct. And then we'll hear from you again with Jackie, Adele, and the department, the final document from your side, which will then go deal with it close by close next week. Ne? Please try your level best. Adele?
Yes, Chair. The legal team will, outside of this meeting, iron out any issues that are still remaining. And then next week, we will present the documents with everything ironed out for close-by-close deliberations. And then just after close-by-close deliberations, I just want to remind the committee, we would then need an opportunity to present the A-list, that is the technical document that reflects all the changes that we are discussing at Devon. Thank you, Chair.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Okay, Shiva, over to you. Now it.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, members, and to the department. What we will be having now is the report on the motion of desirability. Nelisa, I'm not sure if you want to be able to reply to that. Members, we sent all the reports, but we can take that one off the list on the screen.
No, I'm sorry, I'm sure I'm going to. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's not because of a minute, struggle and recovery.
thank you, Chair Members. So the title of our report is the draft report of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities on the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Bill. It's B31/2022, maybe. So I'm just correcting that. It's not of 2019, that's the first. So I've just corrected, it's not B11/2019 as it was on the screen, it is B31/2022. I've just corrected this. It's the date today is when we consider it, it is 2023, but it was introduced as a B31/2022. I'm just going to go through with members the report. It's fairly short, just 2 pages. So the committee hasn't considered the bill. In the National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it as classified by the Joint Tagging Mechanism as a Section 75 bill, will be reported as follows. One, the bill was tabled in Parliament and referred to the Committee on 11 October 2022 for information and to the JTN in terms of Joint Law 159 for tagging, and it was tagged as Section 75. In terms of two, it basically outlines what the purpose, objects and functions of the bill is. So to provide for the objects and functions of the council, to appoint the board of the council, provide for the appointment of members, the term of office, termination of members, the termination of membership, provide for meetings of boards, the establishment of committees, the appointment of the CEO and secretariat unit of the council, establishment of norms and standards for the provincial and local working groups, and provide for making of regulations, and provide for matters connected therewith. In terms of three, we received our first briefing on the bill by the department on the 28th of Feb. Four, in facilitating effective public participation on the bill, the committee conducted in-person and virtual public hearings on 6th and 13th June. A total of 17 oral submissions were heard by the committee during these hearings. Five, the committee received oral submissions from individuals and organizations such as various groups such as academics, civil society organizations, statutory bodies, business experts, and a labor union. We only had one labor union, as you members would remember. That was PASATU. In addition to the public hearings, the committee received 52 submissions from the public. So written submissions were submitted electronically via email and online. One of the organizations had submitted 4 times online and did an oral presentation, but these were all the same, and that was Fathers for Justice. In terms of seven, the Department of Women, Youth and Disabilities responded to the issues raised during the public hearings on the 29th of August, the 5th, and including today, the 12th of September. National Assembly Rule 286(4)(i) requires that the committee, after due deliberation, must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill, and if rejected, must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. Based on all the inputs received and engagement on the bill, a motion of desirability on the subject matter is placed is placed before the committee as required by the rule 2864 to vote on. And so after this, as members can see on the screen, we need to have an indication of votes in favour of the motion of desirability in terms of members. We will then insert for every member who's agreed to it the name, and Nelisa will take that down and then we will insert it. For members who are not in support of the bill to be rejected, we will note that. And then thereafter, the committee accordingly then agreed that the subject matter of the bill is desirable and should be further considered in process by the committee. So, Chief, a small hand over to you now so that Melissa can record those who are in favour. We take down the names and insert, and those not, we can do that. Chief.
Chair, just for my own clarity, this is just
a motion to say that the bill is desirable or it's needed.
Yeah.
That's all, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Call
nobody. Did you think about it? Did you know that 5 years later, the office
of society?
Allowed to say party line.
Why were you choosing it? So, Lapena, so that you can be read correctly. Look, 2019 and 2022. Okay, Mama Kaula.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Bongile Makoti Kaula, member of the committee. Ngiyavumelana nale bill ye-MCGBF. Ngiyahambisana nayo. Ikakhulukazi la ngishaye khona umxhwele ile yokuhlanganisa ukhokha kanjalo njalo namakhosi. Ingishaye kakhulu umxhwele, ngiyabonga. I'm tired.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Kaula.
Okay.
Ifuna yena, okay. Ifuna yena ukuthi asho.
Ah, thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Kaula is voting in favor with the bill, more especially with the part that includes quota and the traditional leaders.
Honorable Bodhi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kubana Man Students Marekwa. Vote in favor with the motion of desirability in acceptance of the Council, National Council for Gender-Based Violence, and support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Boni. Honorable Mamsundi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ngiyabonga. Mina ngiyahambisana, ngiyayivuma this bill ukuthi isilungele kakhulu singabomama base-South Africa. Izosinceda kakhulu, kakhulu, kakhulu. Siyabonga, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mamsundi. Honorable Opperman.
Thank you, Chair. I, Gisela Opperman, I vote in favor of the motion of desirability of the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide Vote.
Thank you very much, Honorable Opperman. Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I, Thabile Sylvia Masondo, agree that the bill MCGBVF is desirable.
So you are agreeing, they're supporting. Thank you very much, Honorable.
I'll show my name, of course. I'll put my name up. Not party like that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo. Thank you very much, Honorable members. There's no other member most that I left out. Yeah, all nine members of the Populo Committee have voted for the desirability of this bill of a National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, Bill 31 of 2022. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The bill will be Section 75 bill, and it's desirable, and that's how we're going to continue with it. Thank you very much, Adele, for being part of our meeting. Thank you, Jackie, for being part of our meeting. Gigi, thank you very much, and London Miso and Mr. Neko. Next, right. Thank you very much for being present and for presenting this document to us. So we have done a lot of work, and we are satisfied that as the portfolio committee, we have dealt with all the submissions that you received, and all the submissions that we received as the portfolio committee, 52 written submissions and 17 oral submissions. You have answered, you have responded to each and every one of them, and you have effected most of the proposals by the submission. And those that were not relevant to the bill, we thank all everyone who participated. Everything is important. We take every submission as important. And thank you very much. We'll do justice to the people of South Africa, women of South Africa. The Parliament will consider this bill and by the end of this term, the Portfolio Committee on Women and Youth and Persons with Disabilities will be able to finalize it and present it to the House. And then it will be taken to NCLP. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. What's next? We'd also like to thank the Deputy Minister who's been part of us since we started dealing with this bill. When the department is here to present to the Portfolio Committee, you'll send our appreciation to the DM. Thank you very much. And what's that? Public hearing report. From us now, next. From us as the Portfolio Committee. And we have worked on the document. Honorable Masiko, you will be released next, because you are traveling tomorrow. Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members, and the department again.
Okay.
I'm really sorry, Chair, but myself and Honourable Offerman will have to leave at 1 o'clock because we have another meeting.
No, it's fine. We'll be done before 1. And Kashifa already, because we have done a lot of work. So Kashifa will
highlight.
The purpose of this report is to ensure that we have captured exactly what we've done for the public hearing so that there is an official record. So come next year or 10 years from now and we look back, there's an official document. It won't be ATC, but it's for record purposes of Parliament, that we have captured what we've done. So the introduction explains and the background when the bill was introduced and why it's come about and what the intent and purpose is. In terms of number 3, the public participation, the terms of reference, again, it just outlines where we advertise, all the newspapers are listed, for how long and in what print media. It provides us with a summary of the total number of submissions received, on what dates, when submissions were received late, which submissions those were. Again, just to reiterate, 52 submissions, one organization, Fathers for Justice, submitted 4 times, referring to the same submission. In terms of our public hearings, we outline exactly how many individuals and organizations presented and on what days they were. We started on the 6th, and as Chair noted to members earlier on, it was extended and provided for another day on the 13th. Table 2 on page 3 provides an outline of on the first day who the presenters were. From province and organization, and that on the 13th we received 3 additional presentations. So the late submissions I've noted previously was from 4 individuals and then the one organization, organized labor, which was COSATU. So from 4.1 onwards, the intention here, maybe sorry with me? Yes. Is to provide an overview of the public submission. What Nondumiso has given members is literally what we've captured clause by clause. for our record purposes, we need to say, well, in essence, what are the key things that came up? So that's what we've done under four. The general matters was overall the majority, 54 out of 50, 265% of the submissions were in support of the vote. The emphasis was in placing importance of giving effect to the NSP. Yes, there were issues noted around the location of the office, the role of men, needing further consultation. So those were just general matters. What we captured in this report is to say, in terms of the purpose of the Act, what are the key things that emanated, and we've highlighted where there were recommendations, what those recommendations were. So of the purpose, some of the submissions were saying, as opposed to placing emphasis on elimination, place more emphasis on prevention. But like Nondumeta said, the prevention and the elimination was directly in relation to what's worded in the ASP. In terms of terminology, again, the issue of may and must, several submissions are saying this is problematic. In terms of definition, overall, there was a proposal made to amend GBB, Femicide, Civil Society, the IMCE, and women. In terms of 4.1.5, it was around the establishment of the council. Again, yes, submissions are saying it provides, the bill provides for a cohesive structure, but it doesn't sufficiently provide for a body that will be independent and non-partisan in its nature and design. In terms of the objects of the council, again, the emphasis was placed on the issue of eliminate versus prevention. There were some recommendations provided, as Nondumeta has outlined, around issues of compliance, matters pertaining to monitoring and evaluation. With respect to the functions of the council, it was the concern around the council will not have executive power, what the proposal was to include the implementation of the NSP and the comprehensive national prevention strategy, and to ensure that that it forms part of government employees, APPs, to ensure that the NSP is implemented. And I think, like Ms. Charita mentioned earlier on, some of these things are not relevant for the bill, but it's for the department to take into account when they look at the stat plan and APP. There's some useful elements that can be noted and recorded for documenting in that space. Again, in terms of composition, there was a call to say broaden the number of government departments, include basic education, NPA, Chapter 9 institutions such as DGE, Human Rights Commission, Public Service, and CRL. Just to move on in terms of, there was a lot written about reporting and accountability from across the submissions. Again, it's in terms of the reporting line, be it to the IMC, the minister, the president. And the concern was where does Parliament ensure accountability over the council? In terms of board composition, again, the emphasis placed here was who should be on the board, whether 7 was adequate or not. This is on 4.1.18 as well, on page 7. Suggestions were made as to who should be who should chair and who should co-chair. The need for specificity around age, gender, or disability. Many of the submissions really had challenges or struggles around that 80% composition. And also the importance of being more inclusive and having representation from LGBTQIA plus community and gender non-conforming persons and women. So, yeah, again, very specific recommendations were made as to how that can, those suggestions can be taken into account, which we have covered. So a whole list of departments were provided to say who should be included. Over and above that, gender equity units from universities, NPA, Chapter 9, organized labor. In terms of comments again about who should be the deputy chair and who should be the chair in terms of gender, suggestions were made, and then also including persons with disability on the council. In terms of criteria, it was proposed that all established councils to stipulate clear qualifications and experience required for council membership. And I mean, yeah, they went as far as saying if you're a member of the council, maybe you should be having some experience in sociology, psychology, criminology, or law. But in essence, there should be qualifications for council members as professional experience in fields relevant to GBV or track record of advocacy for gender equality or human rights. Again, suggestions were made in terms of the appointment and the powers of the minister with very clear indications of what certain submissions they put forward. In terms of disqualifications, that was the issue around conviction versus a pending case, and the suggestion was to do background checks that no person convicted of a GBV offence should be appointed, and then again matters pertaining to professional bodies if you've been struck off a delinquent director, and so forth. In terms of declaration of financial and other interests of members, the issue here was around the 10 days. Is 10 days sufficient for the person to gather the respective information? And the proposal was made with 30 days. In terms of the term of office, I think the concern was the NSB says 5 years, the bill says 3 years, shouldn't be aligned with the NSB, and that was coming out from submission. In terms of remuneration, the proposal was that the minister seek guidance from the National Treasury on the regulated remuneration level. And again, the other concern was around the double dipping. In terms of vacancies in the board, a vacancy can also arise due to health reasons, the issue of the 6-month appointment period, and a specific recommendation of how to manage that. In terms of removal of office, that's at the bottom of page 10, where the bail fails to clarify whether the board has the authority to suspend a member of the council pending a decision by the minister to remove such a board member. So a proposal was made on how best to deal with that. And then they also, a submission indicated that the minister must have express powers to deal with non-compliance by members. Therefore, the bill must set a clear, decisive sanction by the minister should this happen. In terms of meeting the board, again, just practical examples provided from submissions for virtual meetings, attendance registers. But again, these are practical things that's not necessarily for the vote, but should be considered in terms of whether you fall into terms of reference or code of conduct for board members, but something the department can do. In terms of committees of board, that it was advisable to have an advisory committee comprised of stakeholders or role players with industry experience, keen interest and influence on the board's mission and vision. Again, for the CEO, submissions are very specific suggestions about having a female CEO, the role of the CEO that we discussed in terms of the functions and the interrelation with the CFO under what? Bottom of page 11, 4.1.18. Secretariat of a council, it was suggested CEO not be the head of the secretariat, that the secretariat should have its own head in terms of the funds of the council, that there was emphasis saying that money should be placed on ensuring that the NSP is implemented. And I think the concern was, as opposed to all the money going to the council, let's ensure that money is put for giving effect to the policy. In terms of financial management, around the issue of separation of duties in terms of what the role of the CEO is and financial management. For audit, annual and financial report, that for clause 20, It should provide for public participation in terms of the Council's annual reporting function to Parliament, and reference is made to Section 6 of the National Minimum Wage Act No. 9 of 2018, which provides that public views are reflected in the annual review report of the National Wage Commission. It was also proposed matters pertaining to corruption and how best to deal with that. Provincial and local structures, the submissions indicated that there is a need for Council to engage with provincial, local and district structures. Very specific proposals were made to this end. Nondumisa had covered it earlier on. In terms of regulations, the argument was that it was vague, it doesn't specify states. There's no clause that provides for drafting regulations and the issue around the time frame. And then, so those were most of the submissions that were in support, but highlighted concerns and challenges there and there. In terms of submissions which didn't support, and the reasons were not for them not supporting, firstly around the constitutional muster, in relation to the aspect of a bill passing the constitutional muster, it was noted that even though the bill was published in 2019, and the public was invited to make submissions during the process in November of that year. The bill was identified as problematic in a number of submissions, and that even in the subsequent summit, there were also concerns raised. So I think the overall issue about people who didn't support the bill, the concern was with all those in a previous engagement, were all those concerns taken into consideration when the bill was drafted. Some submissions felt it wasn't the case. Another issue was, did the bill actually address the root cause of GBV and ensure transparency, accountability and competency in terms of a council? 4.2.3 was the issue of the tagging. Was this appropriate? The explicit views from people who did not support the bill was that it should be a 76 and not a 75. In terms of duplication of structures and negative impact on the fiscus, submissions were not in support, basically argued that the council will be a duplication of what we already have in government in terms of structures and even in terms of Chapter 9, and that as opposed to putting the money for the council, the money should rather go to existing structures to strengthen what we already have. In terms of redirecting funds, again, the suggestion was as opposed to having a council and money allocated for that, the money should be redirected and towards strengthening the criminal justice system and tax. In terms of gaps, the function of the council, they're saying of the submissions were not useful, did not adequately address intergovernmental coordination, which is critical to institutionalizing NSP on GBVF across national, provincial, and local government structures. The argument was that it didn't, the bill failed to establish a multi-sectoral approach, and also in terms of defining accountability. And that the functions of the council cannot be clearly defined in terms of the structure, and again, bringing the argument about 75 versus the 76. And the areas listed in Schedule 4. So in terms of responses, for number 5, at the top of page 15, the department was given an opportunity to respond to the submissions presented to the committee on the 29th of August. The follow-up was done today on the 12th of September. The department took cognizance of the concerns raised, and in terms of providing responses, there was a table in which the department responded to each and every of the items. What I've captured in Table 3 has been based on all the changes made. So what I will ensure is, after engaging with Ndumiso and going through this list, is just to capture whatever the department had proposed a change based on the table, and we captured it. So again, it's for record purposes that this is what the department has proposed in terms of a change or no change. That we've scheduled clause by clause for the 19th of September. We've received input from the state law advisor, and it's been largely around the tagging, the definitions, the appointment process, co-option, remuneration of the board, funding, and the regulations. I'll check again with the state law advisor if there was anything else based on our discussions today that we can capture in there. And that, in summary, I mean, as Chair mentioned, the Chair welcomed all the inputs and interest shown in the bill by the public, and that in terms of resolutions, that there was always a request for the department to respond in writing to any other matter that had been raised by the committee. So one of those things was we had requested for the provincial hearings report, which the department had submitted. So again, members, this report is just an actual record of what we've done. So that come our legacy report 5 or 10 years from now, we can go back to this report and say, this is all we saw on what day, the process we followed, and what we covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sheriff, for capturing our report accordingly on things that were presented by...
Record people, so that people must have
anything else, Kashifa? Well done. Thank you very much, Tazim. Tazim is Christelle, Kashifa, Mr. Vava. Next week, Tuesday, same, the system must be available. The interpreter. Thank you for Mamkaula, Yabonga.
And for me.
And for Mamsoji's interpreter, thank you. And Mito Kanesu Chicago, we thank you very much, Nelly, for the work. Well done. Thank you, honorable members, for voting for this bill to be a desirable bill so that we could continue with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The meeting is adjourned.